This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Third Fenway Rundown of the week. You've heard from Dave Powell, Ken Rosenthal, and now just some Mass Livers catching you up on the Red Sox news of the week, if there is any. I'm Chris Cotillo, and in the guest host chair today is Chris Smith, longtime Mass Live Red Sox beat writer. To say you're a friend of the program would be underrating it, as Sean McAdam flies back from Aruba today. We'll get to
Aruba? He didn't even tell me he was in Aruba.
Yeah, he's not just sitting there ignoring us. He's on the beach all week.
I'm not looking for a response on his vacation. I've only texted him like one or two times, but I mean, I didn't know he was in Aruba. He could have been in wherever the hell he lives.
Yeah, well, no, it's been a big week for the McAdam family. We've still, despite Sean's absence, been able to write some stories for the site, do three podcasts, and of course, Smitty, as you know, our Red Sox Insider text program. Sean usually reads the ad, so bear with me. For $4.99 a month after a 14-day free trial, you'll have exclusive access to texting the Mass Live Red Sox team, Chris Smith, myself, Sean McAdam, non-Aruba version. We send out, text blasts if there's any news, alert you to some of the things that are coming on the site with spring training around the corner. Something you definitely want to get involved in. Again, the Insider Text Program. Text JOIN to 617-751-6257. Click the link and subscribe today. So, again, another kind of slow week. Right before we started rolling, the Red Sox did make a small move, signing Joe Dunand, who is A-Rod's nephew. More infield depth. That's interesting just because he's A-Rod's nephew, and that's all we'll talk about with that. But Chris Smith, you had a very interesting piece that I know took you a lot of work, because I was privy to the process on the Red Sox payroll, the payroll projection, all that type of stuff. Sean and I have talked about ad nauseum this offseason, the budget, the payroll. We've all written about it the same. Your findings were that the Red Sox have currently about, $191-192 million committed. They are going to build in about $10 million more for in-season moves, incentives. So let's say they're about, $200, $201, $202 by your estimates? Yeah. And that obviously leaves a lot of money under both the real competitive balance tax threshold of $237 million and the upper level of the John Henry threshold, as I've been calling it, which is $225.
However, we don't know that the threshold at 225. We just know it's lower than last year, and last year
that's why I called it the higher limit of the threshold. Gotcha. So as you were doing this, I know you did a lot of work. You compared it. You do this last year, or you do it every year. But what were your takeaways? Just that, like, this is probably going to come in much lower than we could have possibly anticipated during the offseason? Because that's what I think, and I think all signs are pointing to that.
Well, now that I have one set, we're going to get one after every transaction, right? Every signing. So be ready, people. I'm going to be updating this bad boy all year.
Great.
They have the money to spend, and they're not going to do it. Actually, I had a dream last night. It was probably because of the John Heyman video where he's insisting they're going to spend money, even though the owners are saying they're not going to spend money. And Rosenthal comes on yesterday and very bleak about what the Red Sox, and he's obviously well in the know. I actually had a dream last night that they signed Jordan Montgomery. That's not going to happen, though, with where the payroll is and where they want to be. My guess is they want to be, even like if it was 225 last year and they want to be below it, I mean, they'll probably want to be not a significant amount below it, but fairly even lower than last year. It's 225. And so, I mean, when you're talking about, that there's top pitchers still on the market and Blake Snell and Montgomery, that it's just not going to happen. And I think we knew that, right? Like, I don't think we need a payroll projection to, figure that out. I mean, you go back to, Sean McAdam's column in, November, December. I think it was like December. And like, you know, somebody's telling him, well, he's talking to somebody about, you know, alternatives after they didn't get Yamamoto. And he brings up Jordan Montgomery. The person's like, they're not going after Jordan Montgomery. And then that's all we've seen all offseason in the reporting since. And so, you know, I would be surprised right now if they went out and got, you know, another pitcher and another outfielder, maybe Duvall, but they're not going to spend a lot of money on that pitcher. They're not going to spend a lot of money on that outfielder, you know, because they're just not going to spend.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to, you know, you are estimating what, that they have like 23, 24 million to spend with the built-in additions to get to 225. And again, we don't necessarily think they're going to get there. Hard to envision, you know, Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell fitting under that. You know, I think, you know, we're looking at for Snell probably 30 million a year more. I would guess that, you know, Montgomery's going to get a little bit more. I guess the escape hatch here, if they do panic and they do make one of those moves, if the prices drop, would be to trade Kenley Jansen or trade Yoshida and offload some salary. But again, the point that I've been trying to make is that the fact they have to do that, or they in their head they have to unload Kenley Jansen or Yoshida, is pathetic. You know, like they shouldn't have to.
I mean, it's super pathetic. You're operating like a small market team. I mean, you know, why would you unload a guy that was an all-star closer for you to get a starting pitcher? It's because you're an unserious ownership. That's why. Like, I praise the ownership for what they've done over the years. I mean, they've won four World Series and they're
Hall of Famers.
And you know, they've been over the competitive balance tax space threshold many times. They're operating in a different way right now. Maybe they get back to the other way in a couple of years, but right now they're not operating in the same way. And it's shocking that you would, you know, trade an all-star closer or trade even like, you know, say Chris Martin could have been an all-star last year.
Had a better year than Kenley by a lot.
To free up money to get another pitcher. It's like, you know, like a starting pitcher because you need to improve the it's like, well, you're you know, you're messing up one area, you're taking away from one area to make another area, you know, better. And that's the way that small market teams operate. And it's just surprising that this is happened. I mentioned on a podcast last night, it was like I felt like going into the offseason, they were going to give, you know, Breslin money to spend because they wanted to get him off on the right foot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, after what, you know, don't immediately have people, you know, calling him Heim Bloom 2.0, which they did at the winter weekend, right? Was that you that tweeted that one?
It was. It wasn't me who screamed it, but somebody did.
Yeah, you tweeted it out that it happened.
Mm-hmm. And, right.
You know, and so I was surprised, you know, by that, like, you know, and also the other point that I'd like to make to you, Cotillo, is that the interesting line, I'll probably write about this. The interesting line, I think that Tom Warner said, or it was Sam Kennedy at the winter weekend, was is like, we'll spend when the time is right. So like, you know, last year they won 78 games, but they went 8-19 or 9-19 during the final month, okay? Mm-hmm. And that was just because they stopped trying, right? Like, and so basically they were at 500 or above 500 for most of the year. And so they're in the wild card hunt. And so that wasn't a team. If you add some players to that, you're going to be in the wild card hunt. And, you know, and you can make the playoffs. And isn't that what every team wants to do, is make the playoffs. Now, you look at it and you say the worst 2 years of Red Sox baseball under this ownership has been 2012 and 2020. And they could have gone into those off seasons saying, well, we just don't have the roster. The time isn't right now to spend some money. But they went out and they, you know, signed Napoli and they signed Shane Victorino and they signed, you know, Ryan Dempster and Johnny Gomes, and they built that team. They didn't, you know, necessarily spend on guys that were going to get 7-8 year contracts with, you know, the $200 million range, but they made some significant moves those off seasons. I mean, even if you go to 2020 to 21, I mean, they still did spend money, obviously. Right. And you can fix something extremely quickly, right? If you're a big market team, by using just some money.
Like
And
they
if
took on Ottavino's deal. It wasn't, a big time thing, but.
you have, I mean, I know like Kike isn't a huge player, but they spent money on Kike, and he did help that team, right? He was really good season. And so, you look and he was the leadoff hitter for that team. So, like, if you look at it from where they were last year, they weren't really that far out of it. I mean, I applied for, BBWA postseason credentials at one point because
I have them here.
I didn't think they were going to get in, but you never knew. Like, they were close. They were, and then obviously, if you look at that 78 win mark, it's just because of the disaster that they had the final month. And so, I think that they were right there. I don't know why this isn't the right time, especially when if you could get like a Montgomery and he's. Like when those other guys come up, he's going to be there in 2 and 3 years. And so you have him when the time is right too. I just don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, the explanations I don't think are ever going to be satisfactory, and I don't think they really pass the smell test just in general, just because of the way they've operated. And I think that's a good segue into Justin Turner. He's the news of the week, Red Sox wise, goes to the Blue Jays for a 1 year, $13 million deal. There's two kind of things to talk about here. Number one, the year he had, the impact he made, and number two, him not coming back. We'll start there. I think it was pretty clear from the GM meetings, you and Sean were down there in Arizona, where Breslow said, we probably want to rotate that DH spot, give Alex Cora some flexibility, which, if they made more significant moves, I think would have made sense. And from Peter Gammon's reporting, quote, tweeting my tweet the other day, he basically said Turner's reps tried to engage the Red Sox, and they were not interested in talking about it. And clearly they were ready to move on and open up that spot. And now, barring an addition, again, Duvall remains an option and some other guys still out there. Looks like Yoshida probably your DH most days, with some of those other outfielders mixing in, which, is a downgrade from what Turner gave you last year. But just like, the big market Red Sox or a big market team, the way those teams think is, hey, this guy might not be a perfect fit, but for $13 million, that's not that much. What he brings, we'll figure it out later. In 2021, you just talked about it a little bit. Kyle Schwarber was not a good fit for the roster, but he was going to be positionally, but he was going to be part of the lineup, and we saw that. He was a huge part of the lineup down the stretch and into October, playing first base probably at the same level you or I could have. It wasn't a clean fit. It was, square peg, round hole to the max, and I think, maybe Justin Turner would have been, but not being competitive on that guy, deciding that he's not worth even exploring. I mean, one for 13 is not going to break the bank. And we saw it for a whole year. He was extremely productive. I guess I was resigned to the fact that they were not going to re-sign him because I thought there was no chance from the very beginning of the offseason. All signs were pointing that direction. So it was just a matter of, where would he go? But now that he's not on the roster, that it's going somewhere else to a division rival, which we can get to, it feels like there's a big hole, and it feels like a little bit surprising or unreasonable they weren't even willing to play ball with him at all.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy, and you look at it, and another point is that you can talk about you talked about Yoshida and how the production right there. I mean he's a good hitter. Saw Suzuki, from year one to year two with the Cubs. I mean he was a lot better, and we saw the first half that Yoshida gave them last year, and it was really good. I mean I remember being in Chicago right after the All-Star break, and he was the most multi-hit game since consecutive multi-hit game since Ted Williams or something. And we're like, we were talking to different players, like, how unbelievable is this guy right now? And then he fell off. So I think he can be significantly better than last year, but he still isn't your prototypical DH. And if you're also rotating guys in too, and you don't have one set DH, what was the 1 year that they didn't have a set DH? It was
17.
2015 between, David Ortiz and, JD Martinez in 2018. And why did they go out and get JD Martinez in 2018? It was because the offense production went significantly down in 2017. If you look at Mookie Betts's worst year with the Red Sox, I mean, it was still a good year, but his numbers did drop significantly, and he didn't have Ortiz in the lineup with him. And then he became the MVP of the AL the next year when JD Martinez was in the lineup. And so, you know, you're looking at a significantly different, you know, I mean, Justin Turner was very important. Like, you know, he's good at controlling the strike zone, taking his walks. He's a, you know, he hit for some power. He's a good hitter. And if you don't have him in the lineup, and I know that, you know, they replaced Verdugo with, you know, Tyler O'Neill, but I mean, we were talking about Verdugo potentially being an all-star last year at one point. And so he really
fell off worse than Yoshida.
Exactly. And then you're not, so, you know, you're replacing him with a guy that's, 12 IL stints in his, you know, how many every year career, 5 years or something that he's been in the league. He hasn't played, you know, more than 100 games once or something like that. So then if he gets injured, then you're going to have to rely on guys like Rafaela who, you know, have not a big sample size. And so the way I look at it is the offense is significantly worse and, worse at least than it was at this time the final day of the season last year.
Yep.
And that's why you would go in and what you talked about an imperfect, you know, fit. Well, he may be imperfect, but you know, he'll benefit the offense greatly. And you know, you need that. And so also, as you know, in the clubhouse, I mean, like, I think Duran was one of the reasons Duran, you know, became what he became last year was because he had, you know, that support from Justin Turner. And, you know, he mentioned Justin Turner many times throughout the year and how Justin, you know, made him comfortable and just the conversations that he can have around the batting cage and help people out like a JD Martinez help people out. It's going to be a significant. I just don't think you can, sabermetrics don't take into consideration a leadership role like that and what he can do. And I think that's going to be a void this year.
I agree totally, you know, and I think it was striking that, you know, we would hear, you know, players completely just volunteer without prompting, you know, JT is our unquestioned leader. JT is the leader of this team, all that stuff. And to me, like, that could not be minimized. And I think, you know, two thoughts. Talk about a lineup void. Last year there was a lot of talk about, well, Xander's gone, JD's gone, who's going to protect Devers? And they brought in Turner for that. Duvall had a piece of that when he was really hot. Now who protects Devers, right? Trevor Story. I think Trevor Story is going to have a good year. I think he's going to bounce back in a big way. I think Yoshida's okay. I think Abreu's a pretty good offensive player. But that's asking a lot of those guys that don't have, you know, the track record, especially in Story's case in recent years, of being able to do that. You know, when you look at the lineup right now and, you know, Devers is the guy and there's really a big drop-off unless Story, you know, really exceeds expectations. Again, mine are high for him. As you said, I think in a winter where the talk has all been about pitching and they don't have enough starters, they have to add a starter, Giolito's not enough, they move Sale, all of a sudden the offense isn't as good. And I think it's a drastic difference, as you said.
Yeah, you know, totally agree. And I just had something that I was going to say and I completely forgot about it because I have two kids downstairs screaming. But, you know, like, as I made the point of JD Martinez, helped, make Mookie Betts an MVP that year just by his presence in the lineup. And so Devers, you know, he was a silver slugger last year, but he did have, you know, he didn't have as good of a year as, you know, if you look at WAR and all that, that he's had in the past.
The worst 33 homer, 100 RBI season of all time.
It was a terrible 33 homer season.
Yes.
But, you know, seriously, though, like you look at it and, he did have a period last year where he was, not walking at all, so much that, you know, Cora pointed out multiple times. And so his, you know, his strikeout numbers were high, his chase rate was higher. And so, he was probably putting some pressure on himself at times to do more with that lineup. And now he could be doing that, you know, even more this year with a weaker lineup. So I do think that they'll probably go out and get somebody, but it's not going to be somebody of real, you know, impact. And Turner could have had an impact.
I think it's interesting. JD Martinez is still out there. Imagine him coming back and, you know, for all that was made about him, I think being such a big presence as kind of a hitting coach and being able to analyze swings, the more I hear, the more it seems like he really rubbed people the wrong way in the clubhouse, especially by the end. And that difference from Martinez to Turner, I think a lot of guys appreciated that in the leadership style. You know, Kike last year went on the record about this with me in spring training, talking about kind of taking a shot at JD, I thought, about, you know, he's down in the cage, focused on himself. Turner's going to be kind of more focused on the whole team. I don't think Kike was alone in thinking of that, making me think that they probably don't want to bring JD Martinez back for that reason, but there are some bats out there. Soler, to a lesser extent, Duvall, some of those guys. I want to get to a couple more
things.
The thing,
though, too, is you know, you can't I agree, but in terms of what he did in the past to JD Martinez, but you can't really call a guy, and I know you're not the one, but you can't really call a guy selfish when he's having the worst year offensively of his career. He's trying to figure out what the heck is going on with his swing. I mean, he wasn't hitting for much power at all that year.
Right.
His power drastically turned off, so he should have been a little selfish.
I mean, he had a great year last year and will be, I'm sure, rewarded here in the coming days with a free agent deal with Turner off the board. Big picture in the AL East wise, I touched on this with Ken yesterday, the Orioles sale. I would file this under not good news for the Red Sox in a winter full of that, you know, because all of a sudden the Orioles, who tanked epically for 5 or 6 years, 4 or 5 years, built up that young core, Gunnar Henderson, Rutschman, Holiday, even some of the pitchers, you know, Bradish, Grayson Rodriguez, like they have a young core that probably is unbeatable in the game. And the Braves obviously have guys that are a little more established, but the Orioles, very, very legit. They won 101 games. I think they have the number one farm system still or high up there.
I was just about to look that up.
And so you're going to have, you know, a team that already won 101 games, a farm system that is among the best in baseball, and now money to spend. I think that's terrifying for the rest of the division. You know, I think it's a complicated deal. Not sure when that spending's exactly going to go into place, but they'll be able to extend those guys or at least make competitive offers when Gunnar Henderson or Rutschman or those guys are ready in a few years, and they can play in the free agent market. You know, I know this stat's been talked about a lot the last few days, but still astonishing to me is that since Mike Elias took over there in 2018, they have not given out a multi-year free agent deal. Like, that to me is absolutely wild. And, you know, I know they got bit with a very bad Chris Davis deal, you know, shortly before that, and maybe probably the worst deal of all time, honestly.
Actually, I was just Googling the Chris Davis deal because I think that was the last time they gave out probably 9-digit number.
Right. And maybe, you know, one of the only
times. At the time, it was the most they had ever given a free agent, too.
I'm sure. Well, yeah, there's no way that's changed. Should the Red Sox be terrified of the Baltimore Orioles moving forward, Chris?
Yes. You know, and you look at the ownership here and, you know, how hungry they came in and aggressive they were. And, you know, you mentioned the, you know, so they're going to spend money on the team. They've already got the best, you know, young players up in the game right now, and they've got, you know, the best farm system in the game right now, or at least it's a top five. I just looked at the midseason rankings. And so, you know, but also you have the ability, if you're going to spend more money, to trade those guys for better players too,
yep.
Like, you know, like established players. And so you know, you can take on bigger contracts as well. So like they could be in
like
the hunt
like Dylan Cease, for example.
Yes. And they could have been in the hunt for Soto, right? Like that, instead of like getting him instead of the Yankees. And how much, like, that was a 100-win team last year, right?
Yep, so 101.
What's that?
I think it was 101.
Yeah, and they may be in the hunt for Soto after the year, you know, with new ownership. So yeah. How long does it take for that all to get complete? Do we know that?
I've been trying to do the reading on it. There's some clauses involving Peter Angelos' eventual death that have to do with it. So I'm not sure when the spending is going to kick in. I mean, I think they should add a pitcher this winter regardless, you know, and maybe this makes them a factor for Montgomery. I'm not sure. I think bigger picture, though, if you look at the division, the Yankees are always going to be spending, you know, and I talked about this on the pod earlier, but at the end of last year, the difference between, you know, the rhetoric from the Red Sox, we finished in last again. We need to be better. We get it. There was a quote from Hal Steinbrenner because they missed the playoffs, but they didn't finish under 500 because they haven't finished under 500 in like my lifetime or longer. And Hal Steinbrenner said, of course, we didn't finish under 500, but that's a non-starter here. Like, we wouldn't even consider that ever happening. Like, he completely dismissed the possibility of finishing under 500 when the Red Sox have, seemed they don't like it, but they seem to accept it on a handful of occasions. So the Yankees are at that level. We saw it again, the Soto move and, some of these free agent deals that they've given out the last few years. Obviously, Judge, like, they're never going to stop. The Orioles have all the factors we just talked about. The Blue Jays have a ton of money, they never spend it as much as they should. I mean, they have kind of in recent years, Gausman, Springer, some of these big free agent deals. But they are a legit organization to always, be afraid of. And the Rays don't spend, but they have probably the smartest front office in the game. And I always say you could bring six randoms, Sean, you, and myself, and put them in the starting lineup for the Rays, and they'd find a way to win 90 games because that's just what they do down there, and they turn those out. It's a tough division. There's no end in sight for it, and I think that that's a very scary thing for the Red Sox, especially if there's a shift in ownership. Last thing, or ownership philosophy. Last thing I want to bring up with you, next week you are debuting, this is an official announcement, debuting something new for Mass Live readers, and you're going to really dig into your Baseball America bag and unveil for the first time the Chris Smith prospect ranking. So how excited are you for this big project?
Well, technically, it's not the first time. I mean, I have done prospect rankings in the past, but this is, I've gone to, I think, 25 or 30 before.
Was that before me?
Pre-Cotillo.
Okay, well, it doesn't count then.
I think I stopped doing it maybe around 2018. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be fun. Prospect rankings are imperfect. I mean, you look at Abreu and, what he showed last year, and he looked better than, he should have been, he was ranked in the 20s or whatever. I don't think he was ever ranked higher than the teens or the 20s in Houston's system. Yep. And, the Red Sox system. And now he's numbers, seven in the Red Sox system by a lot of these things. Like Baseball America, I think, has him seven. Sox Prospects has him in the top 10. So it's like, these are imperfect rankings, but, I've talked a lot, to people throughout the year. I try to write as many minor league stories as possible throughout the year. And often what I look at, with minor leaguers, if they have trouble getting to the majors, it's, high strikeout percentage you see in the minors. I mean, in walk percentage, right? Like, Casas had a really good walk percentage in the minors, even though the strikeout percentage was a little bit high, but he was able to control the strike zone. Whereas, you look at Bobby Dalbec, and even last year when he went down to Worcester, it was like a 33% strikeout.
You got to look at that. You got to look at this new guy they got yesterday, Romy Gonzalez. It's like 37, 38.
So what I like to look at too with prospects is I just like to look at walk rate, strikeout rate, how those two go together. And then also, I think I've told you this before. I like batting average for minor leaguers because, it shows the contact hitters. And that's, the Red Sox have put an emphasis on contact hitters, right, recently. Mm-hmm. Even this Vaughn Grissom is supposed to be a contact hitter. But they had gone to that more so at the end of Bloom too. So, I like to look at certain things with minor leaguers that, beyond just who can throw the hardest and who hits the most home runs. And so, yeah, it should be fun.
Every year that I've known you and worked with you here, you have come up with some prospect that you're super high on that, I make fun of usually. Denny Reyes is my favorite. He's now pitching overseas. A random guy you think is going to be unbelievably good. Ty Buttrey was another early one.
Reyes was going to be unbelievably good. I just thought that it was kind of crazy what he was doing in terms of his, never throwing a walk in the minors. Mm-hmm. And I know that obviously can change when you get to be, you get up to better hitters, right? So you have to be careful and you can't just throw strikes. But, so is a, you know, like if I'm covering the minor leagues, I feel everybody that's doing well deserves some like type of thing, you know, like that's not, I don't necessarily think they're going to be great when they get to the majors. I actually, to confess this one, I mean, I wrote about Jaron Duran a million times when he was in the minor leagues, but I didn't know technically how good of a player he would be when he got to the major leagues. Cause you know, you've seen guys like, Garen Caccini or whatever, and you know, the on-base percentage is insane, but you know, you could look at, you know, maybe I don't see everything. Maybe Duran's just benefiting a lot by his speed, you know, infield singles and
hustle doubles.
Also the fact that you know, defense isn't as good in the minors, and so you know they're not going to get to those balls in the outfield, or you know, so it's very difficult, I think, to determine, unless it's like a, you know, Marcel Meyer, you can have an idea of, you know, when you're top six pick of what they're going to be, or they ultimately sometimes don't turn out either, but it's difficult to know what a guy that was drafted, what, in the mid, I think he was like sixth round.
Meyer?
Durant, sixth round.
Sixth like or that. Seventh, yeah.
It's like it's difficult to know because they could be producing all these great stats in the minors and it just doesn't translate when it gets to the big league. So I, you know, I try to, if I see a guy that's, and even though he's not, you know, the number one prospect, he's, you know, number 20 or 30, but he's hitting, you know, he's hitting it and he's showing it. I'll feature him during the year.
The Denny question was a segue to this. If you were to identify one guy no one's talking about, you know, last year we actually asked Heim this question in an off the record session, and he said Shane Drouin. And, you know, that proved right for the first part of the year. I guess he was a Rule 5 guy, which maybe you didn't see a year ago. If you were to, who's a guy that you think, as we wrap here, you're going to overrate compared to maybe the rest of the industry?
That's a good question.
It's called a tease.
I'm actually looking at, you know, like last year I looked at like Blaze Jordan and I, you know, I looked at how this guy has always been known for his power, but you know, it's incredible that he doesn't strike out much for, or he doesn't strike out like a young power hitter would. And, but then I read something at the end of the year with Keith Law where he didn't like his bat speed. And so, you know, there's many factors that go into it. So, you know, I don't know everything. I don't know the bat speed of certain guys that, you know, I don't go to these things like Keith Law does. However, you know, just looking it over, I think Chase Meidroff could, you know, be somebody that you could see. I think that he had the best on base percentage of anybody that, you know, had over what, 400, 300, 400, you know, at bats in the minors last year, 408, I think his on base percentage was. And he is, you know, fairly high on some of the rankings, like, you know, 12th, 13th and stuff like that. And I think he tailed off towards the end of the year, but he's the guy that's, you know, young and, you know, should be interesting. I think that, you know, so that's one right there that you look at. And, you know, maybe like a Hunter Dobbins, like who, you know, a pitcher who has really good stuff. Maybe they take a leap with Breslow. Okay, so like, you know, and it should be interesting, the guys that, you know, throw hard but have, you know, not as much control, you know, Gonzalez and, you know, certain guys in the system, like how they improve under this new pitching infrastructure. And I think that doesn't just go for the top prospects, but it goes for guys that like Hunter Dobbins that are just right outside say the number 10, or, you know, Richard Fitz guy where he's got, you know, extremely good control and, you know, maybe they just figure out something with him. And so, yeah, I mean, there's definitely guys that are in the top 30 that could make a major leap this year, just benefiting pitchers, benefiting from, you know, the new infrastructure that they have pitching wise.
Chris Smith will have his prospect rankings on the site next week, all 5 days, I believe, and we will keep you updated there on the pod with Sean McAdam back next week and our Fenway Rundown Insider text. Again, if you have questions from what we talked about on the pod, the coverage, general Red Sox questions, You know, we don't really look at Twitter as much and answer those because we do have this insider text program, $4.99 a month after a 14-day free trial. Those who have liked it, or those who have tried it have loved it. Text joined at 617-751-6257. Click the link and subscribe today. I'm Chris Cotillo. That's Chris Smith. And that is the final Fenway Rundown of the week.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.